Good morning. 11:05 a.m. It's still morning. It's still morning. January 21st, 2014. It's still morning. Just barely. I'll get home in time for lunch. Usually I get home for breakfast. Anyway. This morning when I took the kid to school and kicked her out somewhat unceremoniously of the car, I did stop first, which I thought was... Okay. Just under 17 minutes. Yeah, I did stop the car before I opened the door and kicked her up. That was the only consideration she got this morning. She wanted to stay home. I said no. Actually, I said yes. And then went and asked her about it. Because she isn't sick. She just doesn't want to go. She's down this morning. Her mood is not up to dealing with school. But if she misses school, she misses rehearsal. If she misses rehearsal, then she doesn't look good to the director, who will then be recruiting next year. So yeah, there's a price, there's a consequence. And she decided she would go to school. So after I got dressed and got the car started and got it pulled out into the driveway and warmed up, she decided no, she didn't want to go. I said, get in the car, we're going. It is too late to change your mind. We're going. If she hasn't, she's already missed 12 days, and that's 2 days over the district limit for a number of days absent. Now, I'm not quite sure how the district feels about having sick kids come to school. Apparently, they're quite in favor of it and happy to have the germs spread. And most of the days that she was out, the 12 that she was out so far, were legitimately sick. I'm not going to say they all were, because no, they weren't. But today was one of those days where, no kid, you got to go. It's first day after a long weekend. You got to go. You got to get caught up. You got to turn your work in. New semester, new leaf, let's do it. She wasn't happy, but she did get out of the car. So I didn't have to actually kick her or anything. But when I got back, it was like 12 degrees. And the wind was blowing, and it was cold. I mean, it was frosty. So I decided I would wait till mid-morning and do a little work first, and then use the walk as a little break, a bit of pick-me-up between projects. So here I am. I'm a little later than I planned. Brand called, and we talked a bit about his Noblesse Oblige series. He has some very cool ideas. I'm really looking forward to reading them. I gave him an awful ration of crap about the ending of Invito Rex. It was my honest response, but that's just my response. It's not apparently everybody's response. Because he's getting a lot of feedback on this book, which is great, because typically he doesn't get a lot of feedback. Which also means he must be building his audience to a critical mass level, which gives him excellent prospects for the next book. But yeah, Invito Rex. If you haven't read The Hidden Institute, then start there, and then go to Invito Rex, because you need to know who Dizzy is. The next few books should be, the next couple books should be pretty interesting. So, yeah, wow. Speaking of books, Sam Hunt, S.A. Hunt. The Whirlwind in a Thorn Tree. I think I mentioned this before. Yeah, this is a freebie right now. Go grab it. If you like fantasy, this is the classic trope of real world fantasy world, sort of like Burroughs' Mars books, where John Carter of Mars goes back and forth between the Earth and Mars. This is the same sort of deal, where the leader, the main character, Ross, goes back and forth between the real world and this fantasy world. I don't think that's spoiling anything. It's not a big surprise. You can see this coming from, like, the second page. The second page of where the book really starts, not the prologue. Not the first chapter. The first chapter, I'm convinced the first chapter is Sam Hahn trying to convince you not to read his book. Because it's just maddening. It's just aggravating in the extreme. I found it to be aggravating in the extreme. The writing is okay. The writing is pretty good. It's completely void of any kind of setting. So it happens sort of in a vacuum. It happens sort of in a white room where there's a couple of things picked out. There's a cabin near some woods, and there's a guy. He has a gun, and you don't know what kind of gun. You don't know what year gun. You don't know. Is it a musket? Is it a Glock? What? And he doesn't say. He doesn't give you any clues. Doesn't give any hint as to time or technology or setting in terms of what the heck he's talking about. And so it's the first half of the chapter is one guy's point of view, and then he switches to a different guy's point of view, which is fine, that's fine. And he does it very well. But then none of the pieces go together. None of the pieces add up. None of the pieces match. The people are... you don't know what they're doing, you don't know why they're doing it, you don't know anything. And for me, when I got to the end of the prologue, I didn't care. It's like, yeah, okay, fine. But I didn't care, and that was the biggie. Now, when I started reading the second chapter, completely separate setting, completely different book, completely different characters. Oh, shut up. I'm going to stop until I get by this dog. Gosh. Hush, dog. Multiple dogs. So then when he starts in chapter 2, with the guy waking up on the bus, this is, that was where I threw the book away. No, not really. It was on my phone, or I would have tossed it across the room. It was one of those moments where... Okay, you've introduced two characters, neither of whom appear to be of any importance whatsoever, and now you're going to introduce a third character, and I'm supposed to care. The answer is no. No. So I talked to Sam about this anyway, and he was quite, on the one hand, quite upset that I didn't like the prologue, because he thought it drew the reader in. And I tried to tell him, well, for this reader, it pushed me away. And he said, well, you didn't even get into the good stuff. And I said, well, you know, I've read a whole chapter. I've started a third. I've started a second. If I'm not into the good stuff yet. What's up with that? So I took him at his word, and I went back. And I pretended I didn't read the first chapter. And I started again, a whole new book, starting with chapter 2. I never saw that prologue. I never saw that thing that happened before. I wasn't part of my worldview. I forgot it completely. I expunged it from my brain. And I started chapter 2. Holy crap, this is a good book. This is really a good book. Plot, yep, has some. Characters, a couple of them are kind of cardboardy, but they're cardboardy in the right way. This is a really good book. So, yeah, it's also free at the moment, or it was yesterday. I don't know how long it's going to be free, but it's free at the moment. So, And I know there's a sequel to it, and I know he's writing a third book. So if this is, if this kind of fantasy, this sort of other world fantasy has any appeal, this is when you want to go read, because I'm just enjoying hell of it. I'm supposed to be working on short story stuff. I'm supposed to be working on paperback. And I am working on paperbacks. Galley for Full Share will be here next week. I should have the edits done on Half Share by then. Monk Pull. But I can only work on that stuff so many hours a day before I want to gouge my eyes out. So, no. I'm supposed to be working on this project with... what's his name? Michael McMillan Reeves from Australia. He's the guy who wrote City of Masks and podcasted on Patio Books. City of Masks, if you haven't heard it, City of Masks is pretty spectacular. It's a wonderful sort of alternate reality fantasy. That sort of goes against the grain. It's sort of like, yeah. But it has this sort of Venetian flair to it, this sort of European sensibility to it that I found quite charming, and the book itself was awesome. People take on identities with their masks, and they take on personalities with their masks, much in the same way that people do in real life. They don't have physical masks, but they have masks that they wear, and with them come different personalities. So I thought it was particularly well done, and I enjoyed it a great deal, and I've never read anything else that he's done. But City of Masks, it's at Potty Books. So a little while ago, a week or two ago, he said he wanted to start this short story project where he's going to analyze a short story once a month, and then try to write a story based on the lessons that he learned from analyzing the short story. And then try to sell it to like a magazine or something. And he's going to keep it moving until it sells. I'm not going to send my stories to magazines. But I will collect them, and I might put out an anthology of them. I might sell them for 99 cents. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it works. But he posted his first one yesterday. Yeah, it must have been yesterday. The days have all sort of blended together because of the holiday, and we've got the family home, and everybody's home, and nobody's at work, and nobody's at school, and the day is sort of like, I've got no benchmarks, no routine for it, so I drift away. So yeah, he posted his first one, and it was pretty cool. But that means that I have to get my act together and find some short stories. Now, when I say I don't read short stories, I don't read short stories. I don't have anthologies of short stories just laying around on my Kindle or in my library. I don't read short stories. The only short stories that I have come in contact with in the last 10 years have been Escape Pod, those things that I read for other people, for Crime City Central and the like. So yeah, I don't have any. So first problem is find some. And now I have to read a couple. And of course, I read a lot of short stories when I was younger. I read a lot of science fiction short stories when I was younger. I read pretty much everything O. Henry ever wrote. So, you know, O. Henry's short stories are so masterful. They're so unique. They are so identifiably O. Henry stories. I have a feeling that trying to learn something from analyzing an O. Henry story would be trying to learn how to write by analyzing Nora Roberts. It's just there's no edges to get your fingers under. Pry it up to see what's going on back there. But I think maybe I've read enough Nora Roberts now that maybe I could begin to analyze a little bit. There are some things that she does over and over again. Having read enough of her books, I can sort of make out a pattern. It's not a rigid pattern. It sort of floats. But it's also there. So perhaps I could read a few dozen more and come up with what that pattern actually is. But I have this sense that there is a pattern here. So anyway, I have to analyze a short story. And one of the interesting challenges for me is, how do you analyze a short story? What lessons do you learn from reading a short story? And it made me think of something that Dan Sawyer said about learning to be a filmmaker, and that you have to watch a bad film like 200 times. And I think you watched, what did he say you watched? Plan 9 from Outer Space? Some movie like that. It was an Ed Wood film, I know that. Oh, no, it wasn't. It was Red Room. Nicholson. Oh, the heck was the name of that story? Stanley Hotel. I'll think of it in a minute. Anyway, he watched it like 200 times, and then he began to see why it worked. Because once you see it that many times, you stop watching the film and you start looking at other things, like what are the cuts and how does it splice and where does it go and what's the pacing and what's the tempo and how does that tempo get translated to the viewer. And I thought, well, okay, if I read the same short story a dozen times, perhaps that'll help. The other thing that I thought of was Dean Wesley Smith advocated to learn how somebody does an opening. If there's an opening that works really well, type it, copy it, type it down so it goes through your brain, through your fingers, and onto the page again. And I'm thinking, well, maybe that will work. Maybe that would be an adequate mode of analysis to see if, in the process of transcribing it, anything pops up. So I'm making some progress there. I found several classic science, short stories, anthologies of classic American and European short stories on Project Gutenberg. These are old stories. I picked up one that's riddle stories. So the early days of the detective story before the continental operative became a thing. So it's got stories like Poe's The Gold Bug, and two stories by Ambrose Bierce that I've never heard of. And so I started reading Ambrose Bierce. Now, Bierce is one of those people that I've sort of had a periphery of my literary vision for a long time, but I always think of him much more in relation to, like, The Devil's Dictionary than to a detective story, or a riddle story, as it were. So this should be interesting. This should be fun. This should be something that I can do to sort of cleanse my palate between editing. And in addition to actually stealing a couple hours a day to try to write some new words of my own, perhaps this will spur me to greater heights of productivity. But I thought it was worth doing, because if I can get short stories down, if I can get the short form down, it means that I can I can put new product out. I can throw a 99-cent short story up in a matter of a week or so. It's not going to take 3 months to put a short story out if I can get it down, if it's good stuff. And I still have this romance story that I wrote for Dean Wesley Smith two years ago in March, that I want to write two more short stories to go with it and put out a collection called Schools Out, a collection of romantic shorts. And I think that'll be fun. I think that'll be something new and different. I think that'll be energizing for me in the midst of all of this other horse shit. Wow, 18:48, almost 19 minutes on the second half. I really wasn't pushing very hard, and it obviously shows, but I am at the back gate. Tomorrow's another day. Heads up on Thursday. Thursday I may not be able to walk. We'll have to see how it goes. The wife is having surgery We have to be at the surgery center at 5 a.m. and it's 20 miles away. So I have to go drop her off, come back, get the kid, take the kid to school, and then go back to the surgery center so that I'll be there for her surgery. I don't know how long it's going to take. I don't know when we're going to get back. If there's time, if I can leave her, I may be ready for a walk by then. But I'm looking at Thursday as probably not going to be a walk. Just a heads up on my schedule. So with that, tomorrow's another day. And with any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.